Hello.
Episode number 17 of the Tampa 2 podcast. My name is Terry.
And I'm Leo.
And we get started, as always, with the Tampa in 2.
The Tampa in 2.
Leo, why don't you start us off today?
All right. In Rays news, spring training is well underway. Started on Saturday, so basically right after you had heard the last one, but after we'd recorded it, so we couldn't really talk about it much. But since then, the Rays have played 7 games and won 5 of them. It's spring training, doesn't mean a ton, but winning is winning. Lost to the Tigers this afternoon, but Evan Longoria played well, which is really big because he's coming back after having surgery in the offseason. A couple of the pitchers didn't have a good day, but that's... You'd rather have the pitchers bad now than the hitters, because the pitchers don't give their full effort yet.
Yeah.
Because they're saving their arms.
Sure.
So, but yeah, so far so good for the Rays.
Yeah. Magic news. We won one versus the 76ers. We're still 29th in the league. So really, at this point, we're just hoping for a good draft pick.
Yeah.
So.
And with the lottery, you're not always guaranteed the best draft pick. But
yeah,
maybe we'll get lucky. We got lucky when we got Dwight Howard. So.
Sure, yeah. That's all we can hope for at this point. USF basketball news. We had a week off, and like we mentioned, they were playing Pitt, and we lost by 1 point. It's kind of pathetic.
Yeah.
But, you know, and kind of trying to put a positive spin on things, Jawanza Poland made the Big East Honor Roll. So congratulations, Jawanza.
Somebody doing something good at USF basketball.
Yeah, we probably won't talk about them a whole lot more.
Yeah.
We might focus a little bit more on Florida. And, you know, UCF is the same as USF. They're kind of, you know, not super sports
kind of
men
at this point.
Right. But, you know, if something does good come up, we'll mention it.
Absolutely.
So, Leo, Bucks news.
Nothing really specific yet. Obviously, check out thepewterplank.com for more. But Combine is over. And we'll be talking a little bit more about that outside of the Tampa 2. But the Combine is definitely something that's important for the Bucks going forward.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in just a few seconds. But Lightning news, really quick.
I've noticed that the Tampa 2 kind of becomes the Tampa 2 and then the Lightning in 1.5, which is fine.
There's a lot, you know, going on.
Which is fine, yeah, no. I mean, the Lightning are a roller coaster this season.
Well, let me really quick go through this. We won 1-3 versus, we did beat Carolina, but we have another tough road schedule this week. And in our loss to Buffalo just a couple nights ago, we lost Sammy Salo. They're just saying it's a minor injury. We don't know as to how long he's going to be gone.
Yeah, hockey injuries, they never tell you what's actually going on.
Right, yeah. I mean, and you, with hockey, it could be something as serious as a concussion to, oh, I just kind of hurt my rib.
I think they did say with him it was a lower body injury specifically.
Right.
So at least you can tell something from his waist down got hurt.
Yeah.
And that's about all.
And that's kind of a shame because he's really, you know, since we got him, he's been doing very well.
Yeah.
But we are going to get 2 defensive men coming up from the AHL. Brendan Mickelson and Pierre Cedric Labrie. I
would imagine Labrie if you were pronouncing it the French way. Yeah.
But they should be playing against New York, so we should be seeing their NHL debuts.
Which isn't a long trip for them from Syracuse. So even if they have to go right back down to go back to the AHL,
right? Yeah,
I guess that's one of the benefits of. And this is just a quick aside, we didn't have this down, but they're talking about realigning the NHL into 4 divisions.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And the proposed Lightning division would include all the teams up there, which would be... It would stink for the Lightning because the only close team they'd have in the division is the Panthers, but it would be good because if they needed to call anybody up on a road trip, they're all near Syracuse.
Yeah.
So, and, you know... Let's be honest. Some of the Lightning players are borderline should be in the AHL, and some of their AHL players are borderline should be in the NHL because we've had so many good draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that could play into the Lightning's advantage. But
sure. But, you know, there's a lot going on for the Lightning, and we just, you know, keep rooting for them. And, you know, we keep selling out the games, which is great, you know, from a moral standpoint, from a, you know, fan standpoint. It's always good to show support.
The ownership group is really well supported. People go out because they really like what the owners do in the community. And it's still a good, exciting team to watch. There's been a lot of bad breaks. There's been a lot of frustrating things happen.
Yeah.
And... It's really one of those things, like I mentioned when I did the podcast by myself, is that it seems like the rest of the league has gotten into regular season form, mm-hmm. and that the Lightning have just kind of played the same way all season, which is just because kind of sometimes it looks really good and sometimes it doesn't. Like, they're still working on getting an identity, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's something, especially with this past season, or with the shortened season, excuse me, that we really should have gotten right at the get-go.
Yeah,
so,
it's tough.
But, you know, we just try to keep up. I mean, I think we're still first in our division right now. I mean, we're going back and forth.
Yeah, the division's bad. So, of all the divisions to be struggling like this, I mean, Winnipeg and Carolina are having very similar seasons up and down. Mm-hmm. So,
definitely.
It's going to be one of those things where we either finish third by winning the division, or we finish like 10th and now don't make the playoffs, because that's going to be where the line is.
Right. So. Yeah. So, so that's it for the Tampa and who knows how much. I mean, you know, we ended it.
It's Tampa and whatever
just,
we need.
We're just trying to bring some local flavor to the show. Exactly. So that's all. But anyway, like you mentioned, the Combine has come and gone.
Yes.
And,
Underwear Olympics.
Yeah, for real.
As Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk will tell you, he coined, although I won't be mean, but let's just say that he probably wasn't the first person to ever say it. He's probably just the first person to put it on a blog that's read by millions of people.
Yes, I'm sure there's many people sitting on their couches and it's like, these guys are just running around in their underwear.
Exactly.
Which I was able to catch a little bit of it. And, you know, it's always cool to see guys competing, seeing, you know, who can have the fastest time, who can jump the highest. So that's always really, really cool to see. But that's one thing that I wanted to bring, because, you know, it seems like, in my opinion, that the Combine, obviously the NFL Combine, really has blown up. I mean, particularly with the NFL Network, you know, coming, you know, what, like 5 or 6 years ago, you know, the NFL is obviously going to focus on the Combine more, mm-hmm. but it seems like even then, a lot more people are becoming interested in it. But I guess for those that are listening that might not know exactly what the Combine is, Leo, can you give us just a quick, like, 2-minute summary of what the purpose is and what they do?
Sure. Well, I mean, the history of it, which some people who even do know about the Combine may not know, it started off as really just a medical meeting that if you were interested in being drafted in the NFL, you came from your respective colleges to Indianapolis, you went to this, it's been the same hotel, it's a Holiday Inn.
Oh, really?
In downtown,
I didn't realize it was always Indianapolis.
Yeah, always Indianapolis, always at the Holiday Inn in Indianapolis.
Huh.
And teams, medical directors and doctors would check you out. They'd measure you, they'd check you out. It's like how we had the situation this weekend come up where star Latulale, the defensive tackle for Utah,
mm-hmm.
who was widely considered like a top 5 pick, has found out that he has a heart condition.
Oh.
And they found that out at the draft. It's actually the same heart condition, I believe, that led to the premature death of former Buccaneers defensive end Gaines Adams. Mm. So it's definitely something that's a concern. But that's the point of it, is that the Utah medical staff would never have known. But the level of access that NFL doctors have just to be able to do checks and just run through a battery of tests.
And kind of, you know, this might sound really petty, but, you know, if that person was able to get drafted in top 5 and God forbid keel over within a year, from a team perspective, it's like, well, we just lost a big
and it's something that you need to know from a lot of different perspectives, because now what the draft is or the combine has evolved into is checking their measurables in terms of their size, in terms of their bench press, in terms of what they can run, and so it's evolved into getting teams as much information about players as they can. The players are going to work out, the players are going to be interviewed, the players are going to, you know, have medical checks, and so it's just this extensive testing and drills and just an opportunity for the teams to be exposed to the players and really evaluate them. And so that's really what the Combine has become from its humble origins, is just basically, you know, physicals that was brought into the same place, you know, so that teams didn't have to scramble all over the country and get reports from, you know, various people.
Right, yeah. Just one central location. All the teams can find out all the players that are eligible and figure out what, you know, how healthy they are. So who gets to go then? I mean, because there's obviously tons of football colleges out there. I mean, how do you get to – is it just seniors? Is it, you know, selection? Or
It's any draft-eligible college player. And there are situations where, like, Canadian players and stuff will be able to play too. Like, there's players who come from Canadian colleges and the rules aren't the same. But regardless, the point is that it's all by invite.
Okay.
It's not just like the funny commercial that's come up lately where Deion Sanders pretends to be Leon Sandcastle.
Yeah.
You can't just walk up and be like, I'd like to try out. Because if it is possible to try out for an NFL team.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do it by walking up to the combine.
Right.
You have to go through your local team because there was some guy on the Jets recently who like went in to try out and had tried out like 100 times to play for the Jets.
Yeah.
And finally like made the practice squad for a day or something. I don't know. I don't remember the details of it, but it is possible to try out for a team. Mm-hmm. You don't do it through the combine. The combine is specifically the NFL scouting combine for college players.
So is it the teams that get to pick the people? Is it the NFL? Is it
I believe that there is a committee that is made up of current and former scouting and personnel people.
Mm.
Like the NFL has committees for everything. But
sure.
But yeah, it's a situation where I don't believe that it's all current teams that select the players. I don't think it's all current employees of teams. Some of them are former and some of them are current. I don't know exactly how it works. It's just one of those things where there's usually a general consensus by the NFL of who the draftable players are because they have a draft advisory board
mm-hmm.
that grades every player. And so they kind of use that in combination with some common sense. Like if a kid, they said, like if they graded a kid and said, you're not going to get drafted, but you're close. So come to the combine and see. But if a kid calls up and is like, I want to go to the combine and, you know, the advisory board just said, you're not good enough,
right.
You're not good enough. So I think it works in tandem with that, but it's one of the situations where, you know, there's a lot of politics that go into it as well.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Because like you said, there's a ton of football colleges out there and if you wanted to go
mm-hmm.
and you're from a program that has enough clout, you could probably go.
Yeah, I mean, the mystique of, like, the SEC colleges yeah. and all that.
Yeah,
sure.
Even if you're a backup for Alabama, if you tell Nick Saban, I'm going to the combine, Nick Saban says, okay, you're going to the combine, you're probably going
sure.
to the combine.
No, I understand. So what exactly do they do? I mean, we already mentioned a little bit about the fact that they get measured. They do a typical physical,
mm-hmm.
You know, right. health and vitals and all that kind of
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, definitely beyond a typical physical because they're looking into, you know, underlying conditions that are common among athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Spinal stenosis is another thing that they look for.
Hmm.
Jarvis Jones, who's another prospect in the draft, he currently suffers from that. They knew about it, but it was just something that they wanted to reevaluate him for it, see how it's been progressing. It's basically one of those like degenerative things. And as he put it, you shouldn't really make a big deal out of it. And when he was talking to the media, when he said this,
mm-hmm.
because there's probably a lot of you who have it and you just don't know it.
Right. Okay.
But it's just those things where you want to know,
mm-hmm.
even if Star Lotulelei is going to be fine with his heart condition, once they get medications and they put him on a proper diet and all that stuff.
Sure.
If Jarvis Jones is going to be fine with his spinal stenosis, you just want to know. And so
yeah.
they do, they thoroughly check. And then, so then there's medicals, there's interviews. There's a lot of interviews with the media and with teams.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing that's been coming up in the news lately. And this is a rabbit trail that I'm probably going to write about because I want to compose my thoughts on it. But a lot of thoughts about Manti Te'o.
Oh, sure.
Being gay.
What?
Yeah. The thought is, and people have been perpetrating or whatever the word is.
Wait.
This thought.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That he created the fake girlfriend scenario to hide the fact that he was gay.
So, wait a minute. Hold on. Because I don't feel like that came out during... I watched a little bit of the Combine, particularly when Manti was out there, and I watched a few of the interviews that he did. Where did this even come from? Was this just kind of like an internet thing where someone on the couch was watching and like, oh man, he's got to be gay? Or was this like a question that got asked?
See, it's been one of those things where since it came out, since the situation was, you know, reported on Deadspin and it's gone from there, it's just one of those things that's been tossed around before people even knew exactly what happened. They're just like, that's one of the possibilities, is that this was all just a cover up because he's in some sort of gay relationship or something like that. Honestly, the fact that it's spun out of control, I've got tons of thoughts on that, and that's not where I want to go with this. This is what the interesting part is about it, is this kid from University of Iowa, I believe, it's really irrelevant who it is, it could have been anybody, was talking to reporters, or I believe it was a radio station specifically, who was just asking him questions about the combine. He was talking about his interview, and the people who were giving him the interview, it was one of the teams, asked him, do you have a girlfriend? Are you married? Do you even like girls at all?
Okay.
And like, those are the kind of questions that they're asking. And just, I'll get on my soapbox for like 10 seconds. It's not really a soapbox. It's kind of a law. You can't ask that at a job interview.
Yeah.
That's like asking, are you Catholic?
Yeah.
Are you, you know, are you a veteran? Like, you can't ask these things in a formal job interview because demographical information is
right.
is not supposed to come up,
and it's
equal opportunity. Employers are supposed to not.
Yeah. It doesn't matter
with that. Yeah. So if it turns out that teams were asking those sort of questions, that could be a really big deal. But that's the sort of things that happened. There was a story a couple years ago where Dez Bryant was asked a question if his mother was a prostitute during his it was Jeff Ireland of the Dolphins, I think,
who
specifically asked him that because I guess there was some story that had come out. And so they asked him. And these are the things that they're asking in addition to football questions. So you could go in and they could have the 15 minutes to talk to you and they'll say, have you ever smoked pot? Why did you get suspended for 2 games in 2008? Are you gay? Explain the Tampa 2 defense to us. And that's all the time they have. And so they just rapid fire through them. But that's kind of what players will go through.
Wow.
And so that's in addition to, like, they'll go a whole day of doing drills or workouts or getting measured and examined and poked and prodded, and then they'll go do interviews.
And then they'll get mentally poked and prodded.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Okay, well, and so, you know, as I was watching this, you know, you see just, like you said, drills. It's just constant, you know, they just go. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll do a whole thing of linebackers. They'll do a whole thing with QBs. They'll do a whole thing with kickers or whatever. And they'll just keep going through it. And, you know, the analysts are trying to keep up and the graphics guys for the TV network are trying to keep up. But so you're seeing all these numbers flash around. So what exactly are these coaches, scouts, or even, you know, the average person, you know, the fan of a certain team looking for? You know, what are the ideals? And, you know, are there a couple of key examples that they're looking for or something?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends because obviously different positions need different things.
Sure.
And there will be different workouts for different positions. One historical example is Derek Brooks came out of FSU as a linebacker, but teams wanted him to work out as a defensive back because they didn't think he was big enough to play linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
Those teams that wanted him to play defensive back were wrong, but, you know, in retrospect. But those are the kind of things you do is, how do you do in the basic drills that we would do in practice for this position? You know, how do you backpedal? How do you change the direction if you're on defense? How do you run your route? How do you catch the ball if you're on offense? If you're a blocker or a defensive lineman, how do you, you know, hit somebody with a pad? Like, what is your burst? How do you attack it? Kickers and punters, it's pretty obvious what you would do with kickers and punters. I'm not sure that – I don't think they even really televised much of the kickers and punters because I think
– Yeah, I don't think they did.
I don't think that they do the same kind of stuff because it's just – you've seen what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think for them it's more mental stuff, like asking them, like, you know, we saw that you missed this field goal in this situation. What was going through your head?
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you crack under the pressure, blah, blah, blah. But in terms of ideals – it depends on what kind of system you have as a team. So, like, let's just look at this from the Buccaneers' perspective. Imagine that.
That's natural.
Yeah. If you're running a defense where you've got, you know, the traditional, and it's not the Tampa 2 anymore, but let's just go back to when we were picking Derek Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Tampa 2 defense, and you know each position needs a certain thing. So for your Derek Brooks position, the weak side linebacker position, you want a guy who's fast, who can cover the field, who can, you know, make plays in the passing game and can tackle. You don't get to look at tackling during the combine. That's what you can look back at tape for.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at his 40-yard dash. But more importantly, for a guy like a linebacker and for other guys, you look at these drills where it tests how quickly they can change directions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they'll do suicides, essentially. They don't call them suicides because that's the name that you call it when you're playing the sport, but that's not,
it's not
politically correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe that shuttle drill is the technical term for it.
Okay.
And so they'll do that, and they do cone drills where you have to sidestep between cones and run between cones and things like that. And those are what's important for certain positions. And so that's what you'll look for. But just as kind of just general stuff, a lot of people put a lot of emphasis on the 40-yard dash.
Sure.
And there's some merit to that. Other times you can get burned by putting too much emphasis in it. The Raiders have historically put too much emphasis on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, They selected Darius Hayward Bay about a round too early a couple years ago because he was the fastest wide receiver.
Oh, okay.
So he was widely considered like the 30th best player, and they took him like 7.
Oh, wow. So that didn't really do, and that didn't really do much for them.
Yeah,
obviously, so.
Yeah, he's been, he's been okay. Like, he wouldn't have even been good as a 30th pick, but that's kind of what they do. They've always, especially under Al Davis.
But, sure.
What you're looking for is defensive backs running a 40 between 4.3 seconds and 4.6 seconds, somewhere in there. To contrast, when you're looking at an offensive lineman, 4.6 is the record time, or be record time. We actually had a kid this weekend, Teron Armstead from Arkansas Pine Bluff, who posted the fastest time ever for an offensive lineman. Unofficial times and official times vary because different teams take different times because it's all
sure,
you know, whatever. But somewhere between 4.65 and 4.71 seconds, which is the fastest for an offensive lineman. But you gotta,
yeah.
Obviously, the difference is a lot of defensive backs are track athletes.
Sure.
A lot of offensive linemen are bodybuilders. So
right, yeah. So what is like a running back, you know, because obviously they have to run the field. I mean, you'd obviously would hope to have someone not only with strength but with speed. So like the 40-yard dash, what are an ideal for a running back?
It's similar to defensive backs, but it also depends on what you're specifically looking for. I mean, this year the top guy was Ontario McCaleb from Auburn, and he ran a 4.34, which is pretty fast. But if you're looking for a bigger, stronger back, like if you're looking for a LeGarrette Blount type of player, you're not going to be looking for a guy who runs like that. So then you're looking down the board, and you know, you've got a guy like Monty Ball from Wisconsin, who's a bigger, stronger guy. He ran a 4.66, which, you know, you contrast that with the offensive lineman who ran right around the same thing. But it depends on what you're looking for.
Right.
So, you know, for speed, 4.2 is elite. 4.3 is very good, and 4.4 is good for like speed positions. For non-speed positions, anything with a 4 in the front is good. Because for perspective, Rich Eisen always runs the 40 at the combine, and he runs a 6.
Okay.
So a 40-something white guy in a dress suit runs a 6. So anyone should be at least a second faster than that.
Right.
So
yeah. No, I can see that. So what is it exactly that – why would an average person like – the guy just sitting on a couch like myself, why would we care about the combine? Because really, I mean, you could make an argument, why would you even care about the draft? It really comes down to how your team is actually just going to play. So taking the draft out of it, why would you even care about the combine? Like, why would you watch it? What stock does it hold?
Well, this is a perfect example, and I'll relate this to the Bucks, and I can interweave my opinion, so that's always fun. The Bucks need defensive backs. Eric Wright's probably going to be cut. Aqib Talib was traded, and we had the worst pass defense in the NFL.
Right.
So they're looking at these defensive backs, and the best defensive back in the draft is D. Milliner of Alabama, and there's really not much argument about that. And so he's going to be gone by the time the Bucks pick. And so the Bucks have to decide between the next few guys that are there, who should they take? So it's a situation where you can see the film of these guys playing in college, but you've got three main ones that they're considering, and one played at Wisconsin, one played at Washington, one played at Florida State, and one played at Mississippi State. So you have no common opponents to judge them on, except for maybe one game apiece. So you can't really base it on just film. So you get them all in one place, and you're able to work them out and see, you know, well, you looked fast on film. Just how fast are you? You look like you changed direction well on film. Just how fast you changed direction? In this drill, we're going to run where you're going to, you know, try to intercept the ball. Let's see just how well you catch the ball. And so in the Bucks example, you've got three guys, Desmond Trufant, Xavier Rhodes, and Jonathan Banks, who are widely considered the three best of the rest behind Milliner in terms of cornerbacks. And you come out and you see Desmond Trufant runs much faster in the 40-yard dash than most people expected. Jonathan Banks runs much slower in the 40-yard dash than most people expected. So when you match that up with what you've seen on film, do you see, oh, yeah, well, Jonathan Banks has been getting run past a lot. You know, oh, well, Desmond Trufant does really chase down people well. So those are things that you look at. And when it comes time for the draft, you have more of a knowledge of not just, oh, well, here's the highlight of what this kid did in college. It's, well, maybe he's not as fast as we think he is, or he's definitely faster than we think he is, and there's potential for him to be better. Same with, like, vertical leap. Vertical leap is something they measure at the combine, and it's important for a defensive back. And so if a guy comes in and he can jump, you know, 40 inches as opposed to, like, 33, you know, that's a big difference when it comes to when you're playing against Julio Jones.
Sure.
And he's going to be able to be 6'5" and jump 40 inches. Mm-hmm. You want a guy who's 6'1" and can jump 40 inches, because then, you know,
he's pretty much got,
you've got an even matchup, yet, or yeah, at least pretty close. So there's a lot to look at. And for the average fan, it's a chance to see who your team might draft before the draft. Because if you're a diehard NFL fan, or even just an average NFL fan who doesn't really like the other sports, it's the only football you're going to get in between the Super Bowl or the Pro, yeah, the Super Bowl and Pro Bowl, depending on, you know, where your team exits.
Yeah.
And the draft. So it's the only exposure you're going to get to guys who could play for your team in that time frame.
No, that's true. I mean, it was definitely, I definitely watched more combine this year than I ever had in the past. It's, you know, definitely interesting just to see what the kids are doing and, you know, what kind of times they're putting up. And you're right. I mean, there's just so much kind of, this is the real chess match. You know, I mean, obviously playing the game is one thing, but this is really where you know, try to put a lot of stock and a lot of research into.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I can't imagine what the, you know, teams are, you know, coaches and all that, or scouts are doing, but, no, it's cool. Well, let's move on to our next segment. It's something we introduced last week, and it's just basically news stories you're not going to hear on ESPN. And I came up with, you know, a few of them. Some of them are a little older, but again, these are stuff, even if they were a year old, you probably still wouldn't have heard it unless you were listening to our podcast. So the first one we got, and we'll have all the links to these on Podomatic, and we'll throw them up so that you guys will have access to them. But the first one is an Olympic story. I don't know if you guys have heard, but the 2020 Olympics are going to be in Russia, and wrestling has been taken out. Now, they're just kind of, you know, anytime a country hosts the Olympics, they have the option to bring in or even get rid of a certain event. So some of the ones that they're considering, things like, they're talking about bringing back baseball and softball, mm-hmm. which I don't really care about either way. Karate, roller sports, that would be kind of interesting. I don't know if they're talking about like X Games style things where you have like half pipe or skateboarding, or
I'd imagine that it would be similar to how in the Winter Olympics, snowboarding is both racing and tricks. So they probably do it that way.
Yeah. So, and then like squash, that, I don't know. And then wushu. I don't know. I don't even know what that is.
That's probably not something that Americans are very good at.
Right. And that's the thing, is that the countries always try to stack in their favor sports that they know they can win, or that at least they have a chance with. So anyway, with the 2020 Olympics, there's this controversy that wrestling is probably going to be off the table. And so one Olympic wrestler returned his gold in protest. And let's see, the outcry after wrestling was voted out of the Summer Olympics beginning with 2020 has taken many forms. The latest came Tuesday with another Olympic wrestler sent his gold medal back to the International Olympic Committee in protest, Russian news agency RIA Novosti reported. And it was a Bulgarian champion, Valentin Yardanov. Is that how you think it's pronounced? Yardanov?
Yeah, that works. And also Sagid Mutsalev from Russia. So
yeah,
that's interesting, because this one obviously was not the host country deciding, because Russia would not get rid of wrestling.
Right.
So this is something that the Olympic Committee voted on, but wrestling is certainly something that has been losing its steam over the past few years. I know that my alma mater canceled our wrestling program recently,
mm-hmm.
After it had already been canceled and brought back. So wrestling kind of peaked there for a little while when, what's his name? The guy who's now like in MMA or whatever, Brock Lesnar.
Oh,
was
yeah,
actually
yeah.
doing mm-hmm. real wrestling and doing
right,
really
yeah.
well.
And I remember Kurt, oh, what's his name, from WWE or TNA, whatever he's
yeah.
in now. Kurt Angle. Yeah.
They had a couple of really yeah. prominent American guys who were out there doing it. And so the resurgence was there, and it was in other countries too. And then now it's kind of faded again, because
I wonder if people are blaming like entertainment wrestling for that. I don't know. But anyway, yeah. And further on in the article, this is a USA Today article, by the way. it's just saying, well, U.S. wrestlers follow form, and the coach for the USA Olympic team said probably not. You know, people do different things in different cultures, and you know. So anyway, that was just an interesting thing, and I actually didn't even know that wrestling was going to be off the table in 2020, because we've already seen that with baseball and softball, just because of how lopsided it is. You know, basketball probably won't do that, at least not right away. There might be
a I don't think there will be. And foreshadowing on the baseball, we'll talk more about that in the family duel. It might not be as lopsided as you think.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, anyway, moving on to our next article, another USA Today article. Junior hockey coach sentenced to jail for tripping a player. And so I'm like, okay, what in the world is this all about? Vancouver junior hockey coach has been sentenced to 15 days in jail for tripping a player during a post-game handshake. Martin Tremblay swept out the leg of an opposing player while the teams were going through the typical hockey ritual of lining up to shake hands after the game.
Don't cry. Sweep the leg.
Yeah, sweep the leg. And it says two players, a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old. And this guy's 48 years old, and he's been sentenced to 15 days in jail, which,
good.
You know, let's watch this video really quick. And if you guys listening, you're not going to be able to hear anything. You'll hear the reaction of the crowd, but definitely go check this out, because it's kind of appalling. So here we go. After it loads, I forgot to load it, and now we have to watch the advertisement.
This Pizza Hut stuff looks good, though. I gotta admit.
Yeah. Okay, here we go.
Please sponsor us, Pizza Hut.
Coaches are supposed to be role models for young athletes, but a disturbing case in BC has RCMP recommending assault charges against a hockey coach. He tripped a player from the opposing team. A video of the incident is going viral. Francis Salvaggio has more on the growing outrage.
It was supposed to be a sign of good sportsmanship, a post-rec league championship game handshake between the UBC.
All right, so they're walking down
Richmond Steel. But the coach of the Hornets,
and the guy's not even shaking anyone's hand. And the guy didn't even try to hide it.
Yeah,
he's walking past all the players. He's not shaking any of their hands. And he just he sticks his leg out and uses it like a hook to trip these players. Now it said he pleaded guilty. So, you know, it's just kind of appalling. Mm-hmm. this one's just hilarious. This one comes from foxsports.com.au. So Australia, I think.
Yes.
I'll just read the headline, because I like the headline. Enigmatic AC Milan striker Mario Balotelli orders life-size statue of himself for his Italian home. Don't really have to say much else other than that. He's full of himself.
Yeah, that's Balotelli being Balotelli.
Yeah, and the picture that they used was when he scored, I think it was, the semifinal goal? I don't remember who was in the Euro Cup.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure who they were playing.
Yeah, but it's the famous Hulk pose.
Yeah, he rips off his shirt and he just poses, showing his muscles. I remember watching that game and just thinking, oh my gosh, this guy's a total jerk.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm kind of interested to see how that's going to look. But anyway, like, they talk to the artists and they're saying, oh, it's going to be like classic, you know, Greco-Roman style, but with a little bit of pop flair, and I don't know. The guy's just full of himself.
Exactly.
So anyway, next one. Andy Roddick's ranking continues to rise despite retiring. And the article goes to say that, and this one also comes from foxsports.com.au, basically that they do it they take into account your past year's game, and so that he's just that good. And I don't know if he's that good and that people are bad, that his rank just keeps rising.
As older matches get knocked off, if he had a stretch where he did bad about a year ago, and as those get knocked out of his rating, he's going to go up. So it's the same thing with soccer. A lot of times teams will lose, but then their FIFA ranking will go up because they lost to a bad team exactly a year ago, and then a week will turn over and the team will shoot up. So if America lost to Trinidad and Tobago, and then a year later, they lose to Mexico, and then the following week, their ranking would go up because the loss to Trinidad and Tobago wouldn't matter anymore.
Right, yeah.
So
it's just kind of interesting. This was this article was published on February 20th, and it said he went from 42 to 40. So I don't know if this past week it went up even further. Yeah. I don't know. I don't check tennis.
No, and definitely not checking Andy Roddick's ranking.
Sure. And then this one, I want to get your input on this. 7 surprising facts about NCAA basketball fan heads. This also comes from USA Today. So I'll just go through it really quick. Number one, it started at San Diego State. Says Connor Morgan, a member of the Aztec student section, made the first one in 2002.
I was going to say, because we actually did this at Liberty, but it was not before 2002, so I can't dispute that.
Okay. Michael Jackson was the inspiration. A picture from a court appearance by the King of Pop was the first face ever used.
That's good.
Which for whoever was shooting and they saw that, it'd be a little disturbing.
Exactly.
They're really, really big. That's obvious. That's not really...
Yeah, and if you don't really know what's going on and you're too lazy to go look at the article, it's the massive cutout cardboard faces of just whoever that college sports fans, particularly basketball.
It's usually college basketball, and they'll just hold it while they're shooting free throws, usually. You'll just see these random
pictures. You'll see Dick Vitale, and then you'll see Denzel Washington, and then you'll see some kid from their dorm.
Pikachu, they might hold up a poke. I mean, I don't know.
It's just whatever.
Like, here's one. I don't know. That's one, probably like a random kid. There's Dwight Schrute.
That's McLovin. From Superbad.
Oh, I've never seen it, so I don't know.
And Dwight Schrute, Conan O'Brien,
Macaulay Culkin, the old school Home Alone,
Jose Canseco. I mean, there's just all Britney Spears. I mean, just everybody.
Yeah. Number four, the first time it worked the very first time. Long Beach State's Darnell Thompson was the first player to shoot free throws with a big head behind the basket, and he missed both attempts.
Yeah, quick side note, just as a brag, is something that we used to do at school in our basketball cheering section, is that we would find out a couple players from the other team's girlfriends and yell and ask them, how is Katie, while they're shooting free throws, and that had an alarming success rate. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, we did a lot of pretty cool stuff.
You think we'll see that with big name schools, or are they just so concerned about seeing themselves on TV that...
No, I think we could definitely see that. I definitely would want to see... I think a lot of big name players are not letting information go public, but
sure,
if you were going up against like Alabama football, you know who AJ McCarron's girlfriend is. Brent Musburger definitely does.
Yeah, Brent does, so for sure.
Anyway.
Number five, Marquette University makes their own. It says in 2005, Marquette's athletic department started creating their own big heads and handing them out to students. Did they do that at Liberty? Or?
No. Well, we got to use the athletics printers.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, so, that's cool. Yeah. Because they're huge. And going back to number three, each made a 11x17 piece of paper, and it was adhered to a 20x30 poster. Yeah. I mean, they're huge.
Yeah, exactly.
They're pretty big.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. Number six. This is really funny. Charles Barkley's head leads to wins. It says the Golden Eagles are 33-5 when Barkley's head is used.
Yeah, so only use it in big games then, because you don't want to ruin the mystique.
Yeah, definitely. And then number seven, kind of tying back in, they can be expensive. It says it costs Indiana's athletic department $75 to make each head. And there's a picture here, and there's just, at least 50 of them.
There's a panda, there's the Geico Gecko.
Hey Arnold.
Yeah.
His head. There's Morgan Freeman. I think that's that's the Grinch.
The Grinch.
There's the Grinch. We'll put all these articles, the links to them, so you can see them. I just thought that last one was pretty good. So I wish we could do something where we could use heads. Can you do that in hockey? I mean, you could, but they're not really paying attention.
Yeah, it's not the same. Yeah, the free throws is really where you want to use this. Yeah. So.
What about in baseball? Or would that be like considered like a penalty or foul or something? Like if someone's sitting right behind home plate,
there's an unwritten rule about people behind home plate. First of all, those are normally the most expensive seats.
Sure.
The most expensive seats in basketball are at midcourt on the side.
Uh-huh.
Behind a basket's generally not considered the best seating because you can't see through the hoop.
Right.
So that's usually where they put student sections because they would be cheap seats anyway. So. Yeah, basketball is really the only sport where that works.
Sure. Well, I kind of liken this to
volleyball,
like,
maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
When someone's serving, you put up a random picture.
I don't know if in Olympics, do they do that? I don't know if they have seating behind there.
But you can't get stuff like that into the Olympics.
Sure.
Like if it's a stadium and you bring a flag in, that's one thing. But if it's like a basketball game and you're trying to bring in something, they probably highly regulate what you can bring in.
I'm sure.
So,
because I kind of like... harken this to like I used to watch WWE when I was a kid, and they would bring signs and, you know, say random stuff other than like, hey mom, or, you know, I don't know. I think it's really cool. I think it's really funny to see what.
I really like it. They're pushing the envelope. And
yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. We weren't sure what we were going to do this week, but I think we're going to do an edition of The Family Duel.
Yeah.
So let's just do it. Leo, you got a list for me, and I got one for you.
Okay.
But you first, because I went last time.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've provided you with a duel.
Yes.
We were talking about baseball and the Olympics and international baseball competitions, and the World Baseball Classic. 'Tis right around the corner.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And so what I would like from you is this is kind of a two-parter.
All right.
You're going to have a minute, and then you're going to have a four-part question that's untimed.
Okay.
It'll make sense.
Okay. All right.
But your 2 minutes, or your 1 minute, sorry. Your 1 minute. No, you don't need 2 minutes for this. There are 16 teams that are competing in the World Baseball Classic.
All right.
Name as many of them as you can.
Okay. All right.
And you need to give their official World Baseball Federation name.
Okay.
So, right. So just like if this was soccer and it was Côte d'Ivoire and not Ivory Coast, you only get points for saying Côte d'Ivoire. Hint, Ivory Coast does not play baseball.
Right. So. Yeah, I kind of figured.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So 16 teams.
16
And then
teams.
After there's four questions.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
There's a four-part question.
All right. Well, count me down then.
All right. Go ahead and name as many of the 2013 participants in the World Baseball Classic as you can in 3, 2, 1.
USA, I would hope. Cuba. Puerto Rico, Mexico, Venezuela, Argentina, Japan, go over to Asia, China, maybe the Philippines, Thailand, I imagine Taiwan, but this is one of those where you said you got to use their official name, so I'll say Chinese Taipei, since that's the Olympic designation of it.
30 seconds left.
I feel like I'm just naming random stuff. Honduras, Canada, I can't imagine there's a lot of European teams. Maybe Spain? Oh, man. I feel like I'm missing a couple big ones, but that's all I can really remember.
Yep, and you are out of time.
Okay, all right, so do you want to... Should we go to how now?
No,
do you
wanna, okay. What we're going to do here is you will get 2 bonus points for each one of the 4 parts you get right.
Okay.
And you'll lose 1 point for each one you don't get.
Ooh. All right. So, little twist. Okay.
There have been previous renditions of the World Baseball Classic. This is the 3rd edition.
Okay.
In the previous 2, there have been 4 teams who have won some kind of medal.
Okay.
At the events.
Right.
Name those 4 teams, and for the one that has won golds, mm-hmm. any ones that have won golds, mm-hmm. name those teams specifically. So basically there's 4 right answers, and you have to say, in these, obviously I'm going to use African countries because you know they're not them,
uh-huh.
Egypt, gold, Morocco, South Africa,
okay.
Ethiopia. That would be the way you need to answer it. And so that's how you get them right.
Okay. I really feel like I know United States has won gold in the past in the Olympics for baseball, but I don't feel like they've won the World Baseball Classic. So, let's go with Cuba gold. And then I have to name the 3 other countries that have medaled. Correct?
Yes, and, okay. and if there's any other country you think has gotten gold.
All right. Argentina, Venezuela, gold? Actually, let me take back Argentina and say Puerto Rico and United States.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's go to Hal and see how you did.
Okay.
Terry, you identified 10 out of the 16 countries. However, you identified only 1 country of the 4 medal winners correctly. This brings your total score to 9 out of 16 for a percentage of 56.25%.
Okay, so what did I miss? I mean, what did I get wrong then? I only got 1 of the countries right.
Yeah, of the medal winners, Japan is the only one to win gold. They've won twice.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe I forgot Japan.
South Korea That's, who you did not identify.
Yeah.
Has won two medals.
Never. I mean, it makes sense, but I never would have thought of that.
Cuba has won one medal, and it was not gold, which means you didn't get that one correct. And Venezuela was the one you got correct. They won one bronze medal.
All right.
And
well,
that was in 2009.
Cool.
But of the teams that you missed in general, Brazil and Australia, Dominican Republic and Italy, Korea, and Kingdom of the Netherlands, which
oh, really?
Includes the Netherlands and Europe and all of the islands that they own.
Okay. So, yeah, I wouldn't even...
The Caribbean.
Even if I had said the Netherlands, I probably wouldn't have
so
said
So, like,
the
Andrew
Kingdom.
Jones, formerly of the Braves, is from Curaçao. And
okay.
So he's eligible to play for the Kingdom of the Netherlands.
Oh, that's interesting. So. Well, I think with your list, I think you could definitely... I don't know. You could probably get 56. You have more choices, so you might have to maybe rapid fire more. But yours is simple. Daytona 500 just ended. There were 45 drivers that qualified.
Okay.
Now, 43 only drove.
Yeah.
So what I'll do is if, first of all, you just need to name as many as you can in 1 minute. But if you can name the two drivers that did not even compete, they did not qualify, I will give you 5 bonus points for each one. Okay?
Okay.
So do you understand what's at stake here then?
Yes.
Okay. So, Leo Howell, 1 minute, name as many drivers as you can, and you have 1 minute in 3, 2, 1.
Danica Patrick. Let me just get that one out of the way. Jimmy Johnson, Jeff Gordon, Carl Edwards, Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin, Tony Stewart, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Greg Biffle, Mark Martin, Joey Logano, Trevor Bayne, Elliot Sadler, what's the guy that Danica's dating? Ricky Stenhouse Jr.,
Got about 20 seconds. You're doing pretty good.
Bobby Labonte, Terry Labonte, I think they're done. Juan Pablo Montoya.
5 seconds.
Ricky Bobby.
All right, well, that's time. I think you did pretty well there. We'll see what happens. Please tell us how Leo did.
Leo, you identified 16 out of the 45 drivers for a percentage of 35.55%.
That's not bad. I mean, a couple of the big ones, at least in my opinion, that you, I feel like you missed, or that you did miss, but I feel like you should have got. Casey Kane.
Yeah.
Kyle Busch. Kurt Busch.
Kyle Busch, yeah.
Paul Menard. Yeah, how do you not know Paul?
Save big money.
Save big money, yeah. Brad,
if you know that reference, I'm sorry.
Brian Keselowski, Brad Keselowski. I mean, Michael Waltrip, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a few other names. I mean, I think you definitely could have hit the 50% mark. But yeah, for if you're interested to know who didn't qualify, it was Mike Bliss and Brian Keselowski. So they did not participate. Yeah. So that was a potential 10 points that you could have gotten. Unfortunately, you did not. So, but anyway, that was a good addition to the family duel. Well, let's move right into our last segment of the show. It is prediction time. And we'll just quickly go over last week's predictions. Leo, why don't you start us off?
All right. We predicted the was this the Islanders or the Rangers?
It was the Rangers.
Rangers. Okay, New York Rangers and Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, sorry. I put NY. I didn't put NYI or NYR or something like that.
And we predicted, I predicted that the Canadiens would win. You predicted that the Rangers would win. The Canadiens, in fact, won 3-0, meaning that I won that matchup.
You did.
Can we skip the next one? I don't want to talk about
Let's quickly do it. Okay, it was college basketball, New Mexico versus Colorado State. Leo is a big Colorado State fan. He predicted them to win 74-60. Yes. I predicted New Mexico with the upset 62-58, and they won. It was a huge scoring game, 91-82 yes. for New Mexico. So that
kid from New Mexico got super lucky, but
yeah, that was a W for me. So well, let's move past it to the last one. Is a Bundesliga game.
Yes, and I think I predicted that this might happen, that we'd wind up tied because we would have both picked this one wrong, and that's right. exactly what happened. Is Augsburg beat TFC or whatever it is, Hoffenheim 2-1. And I predicted a tie, and you predicted Hoffenheim to win.
Yes.
So the one thing we didn't predict is what happened, and Augsburg won 2-0.
That's right. So let's go to Hal once again to figure out our overall scores. All right, thanks a lot, Hal. But let's go to this week's game really quick. A couple, again, different ones for you. Start off with NHL. We're right in the middle of the season. This week we have the St. Louis Blues versus the Dallas Stars, Sunday, March 3rd at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Basically, I mean, I've heard a lot about the Blues, but they're kind of up and down. It seems like every team is up and down almost, except for Chicago, which is dominating. But a couple of the key things as I was researching this, St. Louis is first in power plays. They're fifth in goals per game. Dallas is kind of average across the board. They're kind of ranked 15th, 16th all the way across all their stats. So they're not necessarily bad or not necessarily, you know, really good either. But Dallas did lose to St. Louis at home 4-3. So this might be a revenge game for them. We'll see. Excuse me. Let me just clarify. They were visiting St. Louis. So okay. let me just clarify that. But they have St. Louis at Dallas. So I think this... I don't know. I think St. Louis is going to pull it out again. I'm going to say 4-2, St. Louis.
I cannot, in good conscience, select the Dallas Stars to win a hockey game. So I'm going to go with St. Louis by a score of 2-1 just to be different.
All right, fair enough. You know, that works.
I hate the Stars.
Do you like any Dallas team?
I'm okay with the Mavericks.
Okay.
I'm Even okay Mark Cuban? With them. I like Mark Cuban. I think he's okay. A total goof, and he says some stupid stuff, but it's tolerable.
All right.
His stupid stuff is tolerable. Like, I can tolerate Donald Trump, too. Like, there's just something about those two guys that is just like... They're stupid, but, like, they don't tick me off.
It's like, oh, they're just so dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. They're dumb, but they've made a lot more money than me.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, Leah, why don't you introduce this next game?
NBA matchup, big one in the Western Conference. Oklahoma City Thunder on Sunday, March the 3rd, at right about the same time as the other game. 3:30 in the afternoon. We'll be traveling to the LA Clippers at the Staples Center. For this one, it's one of those where I'm just going to have to go with my gut again, go with the team that I prefer. So I'm going to go with the Thunder to win 110-105.
Okay. 110-105. Yes. All right. You know what? I'm kind of in the same ballpark as you, to be honest. This week might not be very different. But, you know, OKC's first in points per game. And the Clippers are fourth in points allowed. So, you know,
yeah.
But the last time OKC is 2-0 versus the Clippers. So that being said, and just how dominant OKC is, I'm with you. I'm going to say 104-100 in favor of
Yeah, it's Oklahoma. It's tough to get me to pick against the Thunder because I did it once and it burned me.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm not going to do it again.
And then finally, we have another foreign soccer game that yes. is not the Premier League. Yeah. It is a La Liga game.
La Liga.
Which, for those of you that don't know, that is the Spanish number one, level yes. one team or league, excuse me. So we have Real Sociedad, I think is how you pronounce sure. that. Versus Real Betis?
Betis.
Yes. Okay. Real Sociedad is the home team. Betis is the away team for this game. Also, March 3rd, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Probably not going to be able to watch that unless you go to your interwebs and
yeah,
find...
Yeah, Fox Soccer Plus may carry it.
Or yeah.
Like the online one, but that's about it.
Yeah. So anyway, as I was looking this up, again, just trying to do a little research, trying to give a little competitive edge, Betis won... their last game at home, 2-0, and Betis is better away. They're actually ranked third right now. They're both kind of upper mid teams. Mm-hmm. They're not like Barcelona. They're not like Real Madrid.
Yeah.
But they're up there. And Sociedad is ranked fifth at home. So this could be a really good game. And actually, based on those stats, I'm actually going to say it's a 2-2 tie.
when I was doing my little bit of research, because I don't like to research much because I overthink things when I research. Real Betis has a player named Ruben Castro. And there is an article out there that compares him to Michu of Swansea City. And so that's all I need to know. And basically that they're the two highest scoring Spanish players in European football this year.
Okay.
Because the highest scoring players in the Spanish league are not Spanish.
Right.
They're Messi and Ronaldo and Falcao, who are...
Messi's Argentinian?
Yes.
And... Ronaldo's Portuguese.
Yes. And Falcao?
I don't know.
I believe he's Peruvian or Colombian. He's from some South American country that's not one of the big ones.
Right, right.
But anyway, so yeah, Ruben Castro plays for Real Betis. And so I'm going to be picking them.
Score.
So I'll say that he bags a hat trick and they win 3-1.
All right. Very good. All right. Well, that does it for us. Tune in next week to find out how we did with our predictions. And guys, thanks as always for listening. Check us out on Tampa2podcast.com. That is Tampa2podcast.com. You can find us on Twitter at that same handle. Email us, Tampa2podcast@gmail.com. Make sure you subscribe to iTunes. Comment, rate. We want to hear from you guys. We want your guys' input. We want this show to be about you guys. So thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Tampa 2 podcast. You can get all the episodes on iTunes. Follow the Tampa 2 on Twitter and check out www.tampa2podcast.com.